Okay, we're calling the transportation meeting to order. This is February 11th, 2010, and it is about 3 minutes after one. And let the record show that Representative Johnson has been excused. Representative Peterson is here. Representative Tammy Wilson, Representative Munoz, and myself, Representative Peggy Wilson. So I would like to recognize our staff today. Nancy Hemingway is our House Recording Secretary, and Sammy is our LIO moderator. And my committee aide is Becky. Before we start, please, if you have cell phones, turn them off, and not just to vibrate, because it interferes with our system and we get a buzz in there. So if you could turn them all the way off, we sure would appreciate it. Let the record show that Representative Gruenberg has just joined us. We have three bills on our agenda today, and our first bill we'll hear is House Bill 322, Winter Tire Requirements, and then we'll take up House Bill 257, ban cell phone use when driving, and finally House Bill 8, Pipe for a Natural Gas Pipeline. So, Representative Harris, can you come forward and introduce your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Representative John Harris, representing District 12. That's right up against Representative T. Wilson's district. And I am the sponsor of House Bill 322 relating to winter tires. Today, Madam Chairman, you're going to hear a couple of bills dealing with proposed safety on the roads, right? One of them having to deal with me talking on the cell phone, and another one having to deal with the safest possible tires in winter driving. Certainly, both are controversial, and both deal with restrictions on people and their activities. And with that, of course, comes folks who don't want to have restrictions, and I understand all that. And having been in that place a time or two, I understand that philosophy. But when I was approached by some people in the tire business about the safety issues of bald tires, of different type of tires that don't hang on the roads very good in winter conditions, ice and snow conditions, I agreed. I said, I agree that's an issue, and it's an issue that needs to be talked about, and we ought to bring the issue forward to the legislature to talk about it. And so with that, you have this bill before you. I'm not going to claim to be an expert. That's why all these other folks are here that are experts on these issues, and hopefully they'll be able to give you a lot of good information, a lot of information that's been studied for years in and around the winter climates of the world. I think most of us who drive in, and just for your information, Madam Chairman, I do have some proposed amendments that you all should have a copy of there, and they'll change some of the bill as we move through. But what happens a lot of times in icy or snowy conditions is people, especially in the cities, they tend to swerve and they have all kinds of various problems without tires that work properly on the road. And I know it bothers me as a driver, and I'm sure every one of you that's had to deal with that sort of thing, you wonder, why can't they have tires that at least grip the road? So it's a safety issue, and I think it's worthwhile to talk about it. I think it's worthwhile to see whether or not the legislature has an interest in trying to promote this issue or not. With that, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask that the committee listen to some folks from Johnson's Tire Service that are here. They are the largest seller of tires in the state of Alaska. They are also the folks that I talk to about this issue. And they can talk a lot more with a lot more education and knowledge about it than I certainly can. And I'll ask them to come up, and I think they have a little slide presentation or whatever for you, and you can ask questions of them. But they're the experts, and as the issue moves along, we'll try to answer questions, and if you have them, and we'll go from there. So if they could come forward, unless you have questions of me initially, I'll glad to turn the chair over to them.
I think maybe it would be good to save the questions until after we see their presentation. So.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, and thanks for hearing the bill on fairly short notice, Madam Chair.
I'm going to state my name and who I am and where I'm from. My name is Kelly Gady. I'm the president of Johnson's Tire Service. I live in Anchorage. We've been in Alaska for 5 years. We come from an extensive background of winter tires. We worked for Nokian Tires. This is a Finnish company that has a tremendous background in the world of winter tires. They invented the winter tire in 1936. I personally was involved with lots of their research and development. We were at that time and continue to be the experts in the business of winter weather and the conditions that we can encounter. And moving to Alaska, it was an astonishing sight to us to see how few people in this state drive on winter tires. When you think of the type of weather that we do get generally in the, I guess we'd call it the rail belts. So I'm going to take you through a little bit of a presentation. Madam Chair, you said you'd like to keep the questions to the end. Please feel free to ask any questions at any time. If there's anything that you'd like to that tweaks your interest. I'm going to start with a couple of videos that are about 15 seconds long and explain a little bit what's happening in those videos.
Okay, and then it's all right if any of the members have questions. I meant that we would save the questions to the sponsor until after
I understand.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay.
All right. First off, this bill has a purpose, and it is simple. It is to create a higher level of safety during wintertime driving months in Alaska. And it doesn't just mean snow. It doesn't just mean ice. We're going to talk a little bit, show you a test called lateral testing. You could refer to it as negative lateral testing, which is a lot of what we see up here. And all of us in Alaska have experienced this. You're going down the road straight. You go to turn, either left or right, and your car doesn't turn. So we're going to show you what can happen in a situation like this. This is the single most serious problem. Doesn't matter whether you're in Europe or whether you're over here. This is the phenomenon that is killing people throughout the world. So let's focus on what can happen in this situation. Notice the speed at 26 miles an hour. Now I know this looks somewhat like a test, but this is really the more telling picture. And this is a situation that we're seeing over and over again. Now over 80% of all major wintertime accidents and fatalities in the United States and in Europe are caused by that very thing right there.
And that was at 28 miles an hour?
28 miles an hour, not very fast. No, it doesn't want to seem to go.
Would it be okay if you can continue to speak while I reset?
Sure.
I think one of the things that when you see how that car didn't turn at all, I mean, what you see in all-season tires, and we'll get into a little bit further into the presentation, is that there is literally what we call no feedback. And what winter tires provide is a level of feedback. If any of us here have ever driven on studs, you may have felt the vibration when turning. That's a form of feedback. That's a way of letting a driver know that, you know what, you could have a possible problem. What you're having in situations with all-season tires is there is literally no feedback, absolutely no feedback. I know that one of the controversies that we have sometimes in areas that get cold weather but don't get a lot of snow is the belief that, well, you know what, I don't get snow, so therefore I really don't need all-season tires. And the fact of the matter is we do need them, and we'll show you a little bit of reasons why. As we know right now, approximately 90% of Alaskans drive on all-season or summer in winter. That means 1 in 10 is driving on what we consider to be a designated winter product. 1 in 10. These tires are completely inadequate in all types of wintertime driving. and most of us here experience that we drive on, say, dry pavement. But it's not necessarily safe enough to have an all-season product. All-season tires are made up of a generic carbon black compounding, which in the United States is focused on mileage. We do a lot of driving in the United States, so therefore it's all about how long the tire lasts. Not about safety. It's not about grip. It has nothing to do with that. It's making sure that we get a long time use out of that tire. The compound loses grip capabilities at 38 degrees. So you take a day like today, say 42 degrees, you've probably lost, people in this town have probably lost around 35% of the gripping capabilities of that product because it starts to harden. And we've seen testing in Finland where the pliability of a product is probably similar to what this table would be. So it's lost about 95% of its capabilities to grip, which is a stunning number. So when you look at what happens here at 15 degrees, the tire's gripping capabilities, an all-season tire or summer tire, is down to just 10%. And that's fact. So that's a stunning number. And this is for people who say, well, you know, I really don't drive in snow. But it's not just about snow. It's also about the temperature. Very, very important to know that. Winter tires are simple. They save lives. Winter tires are manufactured with specific compounds, tread patterns, and advanced studding systems designed for winter driving conditions. The sidewall of the winter tire has been designated with the government severe service emblem. So what we're proposing is simple. If this symbol is on the side of the tire, it is designated adequate or a winter product that will provide the proper safety.
Representative Tammy.
Yeah.
So where do these tires exist right now in the state of Alaska?
They're everywhere in terms of winter product.
Well, no, with the emblem, we actually called a few tire places in Fairbanks today because I didn't understand if it was a certain brand or
right.
what, and they had never heard of it.
I don't know who you called, but it's a emblem that's been around. It's been certified this way for probably about 15 years. It's on the side of every single winter tire. It's a government standard, and Europe actually adopted it as well.
Okay. Now, our United States government has set the seal or whatever that little picture is.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is what is deemed, you know, okay for winter use.
Oh, and while we're got a moment here, sure. I would like to recognize that Representative Johansson has joined us quite some time ago. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Do all snow tires have that symbol, or is it?
Yes, they do. Okay. All winter designated product. And people in the industry are very particular to not call them snow tires, because really the phenomenon is in the United States and North America is that we don't necessarily do a lot of driving on snow. We do a lot of plowing in areas. So people say, you know what, I'm on dry pavement. But the statistics that I'm showing you, that I showed you prior to that, is that we must look at temperature. And temperature is a critical issue when you're talking about pliability and traction. So it's not just about the snow that we drive in, although that is a much more severe issue than just cold weather.
How many brands of tires are there?
There are probably 106 manufacturers worldwide. I would estimate that 75 of those 106 build winter product. So it's an extensive market. It's huge. Everybody's in it.
Okay.
Every major company's in it. It's simple. Winter tires, they save lives. Winter compounds remain pliable up to minus 40 degrees. Tread patterns expel snow, slush, and ice away from the driving path. And if you were to go with studs, which you don't have to go with, studs, we believe, Nokian believes, that is the optimum, which we would consider to be the penultimate in safety. But studs provide the highest level of traction in the most severe winter driving conditions, such as polished ice. Now, not to confuse anybody with the concept of ice, because we really get mixed up with that concept over here, but polished ice is very much like the stuff that, as kids, we used to bumper ski behind. And that's the ice, that, you know, the snow that's been packed over and over. It's basically the two grooves that you feel. You could run on it and slide, but you couldn't really put a pair of skates on it. That's really where most of the driving that we do in Alaska and a lot of the driving that they do in Europe is really this crust that we get maybe on our driveway because we've been driving it over and over and over again. It kind of turns into ice. So it's not literally ice like you would feel, say, out on a pond or on an ice rink. And that's one of the most severe situations that we can get into. There are several designated winter tires already sold in the state. And this is one of the things that we hear. We say, you know what? I don't want to burden Alaskans with two sets of tires or the cost of it. And there's many things that we can talk about regarding cost. The average set of winter tires costs between $400 and $600. And we think that based on the usage, you would probably buy them once every 4 years, maybe 5 years. But there are alternatives. There are companies now that are building what we would consider to be the true four-season tire. You know, an all-season not being really an all-season. Because an all-season tire will work in summer, spring, and fall, but certainly doesn't work in winter. But what a few of these companies have done is they've come up with a world-class winter tire that you can actually use all year round. So there are options. And there's a few manufacturers. There's about seven right now that are doing it. These are some of the tires right now that you can buy. And you can. This has a designated severe service emblem from the government on the side of that tire. And you can drive that all year round.
Since so many of these companies mm-hmm. all make these kind of tires, mm-hmm. Are they more expensive than regular tires?
No, not necessarily. No, no. It depends on your size. Depends on the vehicle that you drive. You know, mostly that's what it is. That's what drives the price of it. But you can buy high performance tires, which you would say put on a Corvette or something like that, and they would be several dollars more than, you know, winter tire. But you know, I also want to clarify that there are what we consider to be ultimate end tires, you know, very, very expensive, and some mid-grade and some cheaper ones. And basically the way those have been put on that screen, Nokian would be very, very high-end, you know, a boat teak tire. Hankook would be somewhere in the middle, BF Goodrich is slightly below that. So it's like buying a car. It'd be like a Mercedes, a Ford, or whatever.
The Nokian, mm-hmm. That would be like the $600 range for four, and the next one would be $500, and the next one would be $400?
You'd be very safe to say that, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think some of the facts that we found in Alaska was the most startling, and I have to say the biggest was us moving here and seeing this. Just the lack of winter tires in this state was shocking. And I think it was the harrowing experience between our rental cars. When we came up here in February of 2005 or 6, I believe it was, and we rented a car that didn't have winter tires on it, and that was frightening. And we had driven down to Alyeska and some areas down to the Kenai Peninsula, and that was one of the more frightening experiences that I've ever been through, and I've done testing in Finland for 10 years. And I think that was one of the things that really shocked us into the fact that Alaskans don't seem to care too much about winter tires. But here's some of the stats. We do know in 2007 that 6,635, or 63% of all accidents, occurred during winter driving months, including accidents on dry pavement. So that's that situation where they have the all season, they think they have enough grip, it's 20 degrees outside, and they crash. 50% of these occurred on ice. And ice considers, everybody knows black ice, and maybe it rains, you don't know that it's really raining, suddenly, you know, your road looks like asphalt, but it's got this thin layer of frozen water on it, and that's black ice. And of course, then there's the polished ice, which is the more common thing that we see. But I think the most startling statistic is this one, is that 55% of all of the 6,000 accidents involved four-wheel drives. And that's largely to do with car manufacturers creating this idea that if you have four-wheel drive, then you don't need anything else, and that you have all the traction that you could possibly want. And what we say in the tire industry is simple. The only safety system touching the road is your tires. That's it. So I don't care if you have a D9 backhoe or whatever you're driving and that has tremendous traction. If you put something like an all-season tire in 20-degree weather, you have no traction. You have no safety. That's a fact. So 55% involve four-wheel or all-wheel drive vehicles. There are benefits, tremendous benefits to legislation. And we've seen this, Michelle and I have seen this personally, worldwide. We've been involved with Nokian, who've done a lot of legislation worldwide in specific countries. Most importantly was our previous employer is Finnish. Finland is made up of 5.3 million people. And they performed the most extensive and comprehensive socioeconomic study regarding the mandatory use of winter tires, really setting the benchmark. And a lot of the studies that you see today, including the one that was done in the University of Alaska, Fairbanks refers to this very study over 70 times, because this has really become the benchmark. They did the most thorough information gathering. Results showed that an economic and moral benefit to winter tire use. Results include millions of dollars of savings in medical and life insurance. Sorry.
Would you go into what you mean by moral benefit?
If a state or a government, and I completely understand what Representative Harris has to say regarding government telling people what to say or to do, but if it is as simple as putting on a set of winter tires, that costs us between $400 and $600, and we know for a fact that it saves lives. We know that it, and we'll show you the data, that it reduces major accidents, that it keeps people from wheelchairs. And I know that sounds somewhat melodramatic, but it's factual. These are the things that are impacting Alaskans as we speak on days like today. We find it to be a moral issue. And I think there is a point in time that I think that there's a far greater benefit to us doing good for the people of Alaska versus saying, don't worry about it. Continue to drive on what you want to drive on. I think we're doing everyone a favor by doing this. We believe that passionately.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
I'm glad you feel that passionate, but you know it's not that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $400 to $600 for a single family, you know, a mother raising children, it's a hardship. $400 to $600. I mean, it's enough just to keep their vehicle running.
That's right.
You know, so for us now to say, you know, you must have this to drive, mm-hmm. or I'm from a military town, so what are we going to do? As soon as they hit the border, we're going to require them to put these tires on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just as simple as, you know, changing your tires. You can just go get a free pair and put them on. So, you know, we take this very seriously, but this has a very big detriment to a lot of families to start requiring
mm-hmm.
them to buy what I couldn't even find today to buy by a telephone call. So, you know, just please keep that in mind.
Well, through the chair, I will say that if we show you some of the data, I think the long-term implementation of winter tires will save people money, will save Alaskans money. We really believe that.
You know, I do want to follow up a little bit.
Sure.
On that, because there are people
mm-hmm.
that just don't have it. I mean, there is no way that they could add more $400 into their budget.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been there. I know that there are people, especially families that have kids. You know, when the kids are home, you never have enough money
right.
for anything.
That's right.
But there are some families, and whether they're a single parent family or whether they're, it doesn't make any difference. They might have, their bills might be all worked out to the nth degree where there's no extra money and they're just living from day to day and from paycheck to paycheck. So this is a real concern
We completely understand that that's probably the biggest objection.
Yeah.
But I also believe it's the easiest objection. And although we're not by any stretch of the imagination downplaying the significance of that, we believe that the alternative is greater.
Okay, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You might have a good idea since you're in the tire business. What's
right.
the difference in the cost of a set of good winter tires
mm-hmm.
versus a set of the all-season ones that don't seem to work as well in the cold weather?
Yeah, through the chair, it's negligible. Again, it depends on the type of vehicle that you're driving, the size of the wheels that you have. You get into some high-performance product that's far more expensive than winter tires. But like I said earlier, there are some extremely expensive winter product, but there's extremely expensive all-season tires as well. So it's negligible. You could buy a set of all-season tires for $500. You could buy a set of winter tires for $500 as well.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Also, I mean, I know we're talking about new tires, but to mm-hmm. what extent does a tire no longer become efficient? Are we looking to also measure the tread, and if it gets down to a certain amount, then it no longer qualifies as a good winter tire?
No, I don't think that. If that was the case, you could certainly put all sorts of bills into place regarding just the usage of our all-season tires, because most people drive in on tires that are completely bald and completely inadequate. But, you know, I think that you should leave that to your local tire expert. I think that people as a whole are pretty smart when it comes to their cars, and if you know, the dealers are doing their job. They're going to check those that product, and they're going to say, you're good to go for another couple of years or another year. Or, you know, it's time to change. Recommendation.
Follow up.
I'm saying I have a car, and right. I put winter tires on there, and it's getting, because I've been really lucky in the seventh year, and it's still running on those tires.
Right.
You know, because we're talking safety here is the whole reason that we're putting this bill forward.
Exactly.
Okay. I decide to go ahead and buy one, but I'm going to sell them over here because I want to get something out of my, we don't throw anything out in Fairbanks, you know.
Right.
So will that sale be okay, or is it, you know, some, I'm not talking about going through a dealer, because if we went through a dealer,
yeah, exactly.
Hopefully they're selling mm-hmm. us a good tire when we come in the first place.
Right.
But what about, where on the marketplace or link does it become no longer a good tire?
Well.
For winter.
Depending on the manufacturer, that's one. Some manufacturers, you could say that they lose their winter capabilities at, say, 50% loss. They measure it in 30 seconds, 14, 30 seconds, 16, 30 seconds is traditionally what they start out with. Some manufacturers lose the winter compounding benefits at about 50%, but you still have a doable tire for the remaining 50%. If you're talking about an Okean, it's the entire life of the product, and the life is basically at 230 seconds, that's deemed bald. And visually, you will definitely know that that tire is not what it was when you bought it. And that applies to any product. I can't, you know, emphasize that enough. If you've seen bald all-season tires, winter tires look very similar to that.
I have a couple of questions.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Are there other northern states that require mandatory
There's not.
Tires?
No, there's not. There's not northern states. And I think the I think the better example is really what they're doing in Europe. And I think the big problem that we have here, and the problem really started with an industry issue. When I say industry, that was the tire industry. And that happened in 1972. And that was when they invented the marketing concept of all season. And they put that on the side of a tire. And up until 1972, there was really two types of tires. There was a summer tire and there was a winter tire. And there was nothing called an all season tire. So I think the United States and Canada have really done the industry a disservice, but most importantly, the end user, the customer, a disservice in selling this idea that this all-season tire is just that, a four-season product. So it's going to be a very, very long time before we think that they're ever going to see the light in that. But does a place like northern New York need it? Does a place like, you know, areas in Massachusetts, Vermont, where we've worked extensively, clearly Alaska, you know, these places need winter product. This is where this stuff was developed. This is the parallels in which it was developed. And I couldn't believe more on the idea.
Okay, proceed.
Okay. You want to?
Come up and yes. Introduce yourself and your affiliation.
Yeah. Okay.
Hello, my name's Michelle Hogan, and I am also with Johnson's Tire Service. I've worked with Kelly when he says we. This is the we that we've been talking about. What I wanted to respond to was your questioning about, more specifically your questioning, about the cost. I'm a single mother, and I understand. One thing that we did do, and the reason for placing the slide into the presentation about the tires that would run year-round, is so that these single mothers and others like us who can afford one set of tires every 4 to 5 years could buy that set next time they're ready.
That's a good point.
Right. We're not asking them to go out and buy a set this minute or this year. But next time, I mean, if this were to pass, we would just ask for the next time it comes through that could be an option.
One of the winter tires that is designated as an all, one of the three that I showed before.
Yeah, one of the tires.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We're encouraging more that if someone was to say on a budget, their option is to come in to buy one of these products that are designated winter capabilities, but you can drive it all year long.
Right.
So you can still own one set of tires.
And you could buy them next time that you're in.
Yeah. Comfortably.
Okay. Representative Peterson, and then I'll then with Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is there a grandfather clause, so to speak, in this bill that was going to allow people to continue using their present tires until they wear out, and then they'd be required to buy another one, or is that something that we need to add to this legislation? Or?
It might be something that needs to be added to the legislation. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that we do, which is, you know, we're probably assuming some things.
The effective date is December 15th, 2011. So, I mean, that is the effective date.
Right.
I would also like to say that when Representative Muniz was asking about northern states, no states in our country have implemented this. However, Quebec recently did it just a few years ago, and they gave 4 years to grandfather in some of the products that were already on the road. You know, they have a step system that's been put in place, and we could certainly model some of the things we're looking at after that bill. Mm-hmm. It is very recent.
That was my question.
Oh, okay. All right, proceed.
Okay. You know, after seeing the results that included millions of dollars of savings in medical and life insurance costs, personal property, state and federal costs associated with accidents, they passed legislation in 1995. Sweden has also done it. I was part of the company when they did this. Population of 9 million people, they passed legislation in 1999 requiring the use of winter tires. The results are simple: accidents involving major injuries and fatalities, and this is not your basic fender bender. This is when somebody is, you know, this doesn't even include a broken arm. That's interesting. If you look at what they consider to be major injuries, a broken arm is classified as a minor injury. I don't understand that. But accidents involving major injuries, fatalities, have decreased between 11 and 14% annually since they've implemented it. So there is a huge impact. And the one that Michelle was speaking about is Quebec, which is the most recent, and I think the one that would be closest to us. A population of 8 million in that province passed legislation in 2008. Prior to legislation, statistics showed that 68% of accidents that occurred during the winter involved at least one vehicle that was equipped with an all-season tire. And that's one of the big issues that we see if you talk to some of the police. We had a gentleman say to us, I think it was last winter, he said, you know, the issue isn't the people with winter tires, it's the people who aren't driving on them. It's very much like the gentleman who drives the motorcycle, or, you know, he's not too concerned about how he's driving, it's really everyone around him. And that's a huge issue as well. And I think that statistic really shows that. And the official number that we've seen so far is that there was a 42% reduction in accidents in just a year. Germany, they took a different approach. Large country, population-wise. They started public service announcements that cost them millions of dollars, encouraging the use of winter tires. And what you see here is from 2005 down to 2007, you can see the reduction, and that was just through encouraging people. Now, there was a little bit of thing there that if you were in a car accident involving, you know, the use of an all-season tire, and you were to, say crashed into a ditch, they would fine you 37 euros. And if you were to have tied up traffic, it was 50 euros. So they really gave it to you if you were messing with traffic. But Germany is now going to adopt, they're going to go with full legislation of winter product. I'm going to turn this section over to Michelle, if that's okay, regarding studs. And I'll just start out this beginning here. Okay, study suggests that studded winter tires reduce crash rates in winter by up to 10%. These avoided crashes saved Alaskans approximately $26 million in economic costs. I'm going to turn it over to you.
No, that seems like a very large number, but it's directly out of a report that the University of Alaska Anchorage put out in 2004 by the School of Engineering, that they did a study on studs and its impact, socioeconomic impact on our state. If you look at this graph, you can see that insurance companies are actually the number one benefactor of the savings that we're talking about. Then you have the actual drivers and passengers, and then of course the federal and state government, and then you have others. When we're looking at accidents, and when you can actually quantify and calculate an actual savings like this, and this is with only 10% of people in the state driving on studs, which we know because of our taxes we pay in for studded tires. If you were to take this, and we do pass this bill, the number of people driving on that will obviously rise significantly, and we believe in turn would reduce the amount of accidents, which would also save more money, and you could multiply that by, we believe, 7 to 8 times in the actual savings in the avoided crash ratings. Now, one thing that has become, and we all know this in our country, is the health care problem. And so the trickle-down effect that we're talking about in this situation is we passed this bill, and as these accidents decrease, and we've seen evidence in several countries that we've already spoken about today and provinces in Canada, the money's paid out for life insurance, health insurance, police and emergency department dispatch. And I can go on and on. I have a list of 10 different categories that have been proven to be affected to save this amount of money. Would ultimately cause insurance premiums to go down, and we believe would put money back into the pockets of our residents here, and hopefully they could use that money in turn to turn around and buy the next set of winter tires and continue the safety circle that we're promoting. So in turn, we believe legislation will save the lives of Alaskans, protect all Alaskans from major injury, create jobs, which we have not spoken about, but if this passes, the amount of winter tires sold in the state will rise dramatically. Johnson's Tire Service currently employs 125 people, and our estimates show we would employ at least 800, and that's just at our company, to provide this type of product to our state, and then save Alaskans money, which we just spoke about.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Okay, I'm looking at your statistics. When a person has an accident, I mean, it could be because of a cell phone, destruction of children, other things going on. How are they getting contributed just to the tires that are on the car?
The information that we base our statistics on is the Department of Transportation's crash data and the road surface reporting that they do. And those, you're right, it could be with other circumstances, but these accidents were specifically reported to have been contributing factors based on ice, snow, and slush.
Follow up. I guess without looking at the way the numbers were, you know, it seems to me you can never take a crash based on one type of thing like the tires would be. So do you know that they ask people other things that have happened, or do they just look at the road surface, the tires? I mean, I've driven on, I've never had a set of, obviously, winter tires, and I haven't crashed, which maybe, knock on wood at this point. So I was trying to put this in perspective. I see a lot of other things happening on the roads that seem to contribute to these accidents versus the tires. And it just seems to me these statistics, the way they are, seems like they're looking at just the surface and the tire and not any other circumstances.
You make a very valid point. And I've been working with a gentleman by the name of Mr. Jack Stickle, who does the reporting over at the DOT. And he actually offered, since he's here in Juneau, for us to come by to get more detailed information. Knowing that as a fact is exactly why we pulled some of the other more hardcore statistics that have been done by actual insurance companies from the other countries and provinces that we showed today.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we appreciate your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't we have Representative Harris come on up, back up. Are there any questions for the sponsor now at this time? Representative Tammy Wilson.
Representative Harris, has there been any analysis on the economic impact it would have on those low-income families?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, through the chair, none that I'm aware of at this point. And I understand your, I listened to your question. I understand that, you know, we dealt with the same issue with seat belts. You weren't in the legislature. Some of you were. Most of you weren't, quite frankly, when the seat belt issue came up. And I happened to be the swing vote that allowed that thing to become law. But anyway, it becomes a primary offense not to wear your seatbelt. But it's now pretty regular. I mean, people get used to it, and it's something that has proven over the years to save lives. If you're wearing your seatbelt in a crash, you have a much better chance of surviving than not. Now, some people will say, well, who cares? You know, and again, I think you're talking about the same issue here. You know, who cares if somebody gets in an accident and kills themselves, right? But the issue really comes down to the safety of everybody else on the highway, not necessarily the safety of the person driving the vehicle. You know, I mean, we all know that vehicles are nothing more than a four-wheeled bomb or a four-wheeled something out there that, if driven improperly, can kill people. And we all understand that. That's just one of the issues out there. And so I guess the question comes down to, do we want to have or don't we want to have, and that's why the issue is brought forward. It's just a discussion issue. Do we want to have, you know, the best tires possible for winter driving conditions on our vehicles or not? And at this point, we don't. I mean, we don't have any laws that say that, and that's the question that's just being asked, is whether or not that's something we want to do or not.
Follow-up, manager, yes. Seatbelts come with cars, last time I checked. You know, we're adding another layer of government on these tires being there. And some of the concerns I have, especially with the military, you know, how soon once you drive into the state do you have to get tires for your vehicle? How readily available are they in all parts of the state? Will only a couple of dealers carry it versus all of them? You can buy tires right now. I want people to be safe. Nobody wants anybody to be killed on the highway. But, you know, if we're talking about safety here and we're talking about a designated type of tire, but yet we're not talking about if it goes bald being safe and a whole lot of other things that have to do with it, I'm just concerned how you would implement this, that it wouldn't become a very big hardship, not just on those who have lower income, but we have a tremendous amount of military here that may only be here for a couple months.
Yeah. Representative Wilson, through the chair. Seatbelts didn't used to come with cars until the federal law changed and made it mandatory and all that sort of stuff. You could get vehicles without seatbelts. I mean, it's been a long time since they haven't come with them, but they didn't used to come with airbags either, and now you can't get a vehicle. I don't think you can get a vehicle without an airbag in it. A whole bunch of other things happen over the years, and a lot of it is due to the high cost of dealing with accidents. You know, insurance costs, you know, right now in federal government, the biggest issue that we have is something, it's health care, but it's an insurance issue. It's the huge cost of being able to afford health care. Well, it's the same thing, the huge cost of being able to afford insurance on your vehicle. You don't have a choice. If you're driving your vehicle without insurance, don't report it because you're violating the law. You don't have a choice not to have insurance. So the issue comes down to, you know, I mean, and that's why we're having a discussion. The issue comes down to, do you want to have the best available technology on your vehicles or don't you, by law? And, you know, there's debate as to whether it is the best available technology. But, you know, that's why when these folks ask me, you know, what do you think, I said, you know, it's an interesting issue. You know, I don't have them on my vehicles. And I don't want to get into the discussion, you know. And I told him, I said, you know, my wife on one of our vehicles has Blizzak tires. Well, some of you may have heard about it. They're not designated, you know, as winter tires per se. Although in our family, my wife says they're pretty damn good. So I gotta like that, right? The point is, what do you want to classify? And in this bill, and I know the DOT has said they don't want to have this responsibility of the department, but in the bill it says that the department can determine what is the correct type. It doesn't necessarily have to have that marking on it, but if the DOT determines, say, that Blizzaks are good enough, or whatever, that's just a brand name for a certain company, you know. But anyway, the point is that they have that discretion. So, I mean, that's kind of the debate, you know, and I understand. You know, I understand in my district and your district and a lot of other districts, people are saying, gee, we already have enough laws and we already have enough. And I'm fully aware of that, and I've fought through that myself over the years. Again, it's a safety issue. It's what's right on the road. And it may or may not be time to do it now, but I think it's good that we have the discussion, and I think we need to move it forward and really try to dissect it out and see whether or not this really saves money. And does it really save people's lives? is it worth it? And so, I mean, I understand the issue that you bring forward about a single mom raising four kids and barely can make it, right? So anyway.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just wondering if an auto dealer who was selling cars in the winter, would he be required to sell cars that had the approved tires on them? I didn't really see that in the build. Is that something we need to add, or?
I'm being told here. The experts are behind me, not me, so here you go. I'm not an expert on much of anything right here.
Representative Peterson, through the chair.
You have to state your name and your...
Oh, sorry, Kelly Gady, Johnson's Tire Service again. All the car dealerships sell tires, and they all sell, almost all of them sell winter tires. They're very much in the business. So,
I have a question.
Sure.
So do they put those good winter tires on the cars that they sell?
If they're good business people at this stage of the game, they do. For instance, if you go to Subaru, they almost always sell you an extra set of wheels and an extra set of winter tires that go along with that. They would be competition for anyone in the tire industry. I mean, they're in the car industry. But the fact of the matter is those people understand the concept of safety. Their cars understand the concept of safety and the idea of putting the absolute safest tire on for winter conditions. They understand that.
We do have someone online from DOT. I don't see any other questions for the sponsor. So Diana Rotskis and Brad Blysma. You're online, or are you here?
Yes. Online. Available for questions.
Oh, they're just available for questions? All right. Well, does anyone have any
questions? Good DOT people over here. They can get up and test
it. Representative Tammy Wilson.
I'll try this one. Are there other tires that you think there's currently sold in Alaska that we're driving on that might fit this definition that you guys would possibly make legal?
Well, was that a question for us?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Introduce yourself, please.
Okay, thank you. Chairman Wilson, my name is Brad Bielsma, and I'm here with Diana Rotkiss. We are managers of the state fleet, and Representative Wilson, to answer your question, yes, there are tires and tire dealers that sell winter tires and studded tires that have the designation that's described in this bill.
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
Ones that wouldn't have like this stamp of the snowflake on. I mean, other ones that are not listed. Would there be other tires that you could think, like the Blizzaks, that would fall underneath as being okay?
The Blizzaks are on the list.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, we're not sure that the Blizzak tire, which is a brand name for Bridgestone, we're not 100% sure that those don't have the snowflake on it. If they don't have that designation, then if the DOT were to qualify certain tires as being winter tires, that would certainly be one of the top candidates to qualify as a winter tire, and I think there would be others. What I was saying before is there are several brands of tires that do carry the winter service designation that are sold in Alaska today.
Follow-up, yeah. Representative Wilson.
And right now, does DOT, do their vehicles have these types of tires in the winter on all their vehicles?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we provide winter tires to all of the vehicles in the state fleet at their discretion, and the tires that we do provide, yes, they do carry this designation.
So this is Peggy Wilson talking now. I had looked at the fiscal note, yeah. And it looks like it would still be quite a large amount of money that would be needed for the state to even be in compliance with this. So obviously, Can you tell me, how many do you think vehicles, state vehicles, have the tires that would be qualified and which ones don't?
Madam Chairman, this is Diana Rutkus, the fleet manager. We estimated that 35%, just based on our Anchorage numbers, 35% of our light-duty vehicles are not using the winter tires with this designation. We do not have the numbers for the University of Alaska or Alaska Housing.
Okay. So if I'm looking at this, the first year it would be $1 million. Is that right?
Madam Chairman, yes, that would be correct. Part of that is when we do buy winter tires for state vehicles, due to time limitations in the changeovers and the number of vehicles that we have to work with, we put them on rims.
You put them on rims?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So that you just have to
switch the rims.
Flip one tire off and get the next one, and it's already got a rim, so you pop it back on.
Madam Chairman, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Yes, I believe we have some other people here from the Department of Transportation.
For the record, my name is Mary Sorokin. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation Public Facilities.
I wonder if our safety expert from the Department of Transportation is available, Cindy Cashin.
Certainly, you can ask Cindy Cashin questions.
I would like to ask her the questions.
As long as you're here, if you have something you'd like to say, why don't you?
I just would like to add one thing for the record. The department is not really in a position to determine what tires are approved for winter driving, which was, I think, the question you were getting at, Representative Wilson. We would rely on something like the Rubber Manufacturers Association or someone else to do that, or these winter designations. But we would not choose to have this work assigned to us as well.
Okay. Representative Tammy Wilson.
Because of the temperature difference between being in Barrow or Fairbanks or Anchorage, would you see that the possibility there could even be different lists depending upon what part of the state, or would you have to just do the most extreme weather? That's probably not a fair question.
I mean, I would actually defer that to Diana Rotkus. I'm not sure what kind of expertise we have to make that kind of really scientific determination. Diana, you want to answer that?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, we would not, or at this time, we do not have a designated tire difference by temperature.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Cindy, you want to come forward?
Madam Chair, are you with Cindy also? No, not.
Sorry, with DOT, not on this issue.
Are you with the state DOT?
Yeah, I'm here for HVA.
We have other bills today.
I see. Okay, well, you know, anybody in the room is a fair target.
Representative Grunberg, you had a question for Cindy?
I was finding out if there were other targets of opportunity as well, but apparently not. Ms. Cashin, are you familiar with the safety aspects that have been alleged for this bill? Have you done any work on this concept?
For the record, my name is Cindy Cashin. I'm the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, no, I just became aware of this bill last night.
Okay. I am concerned, and with all due respect, I want you to know I'm your customer over at Johnson. So I expect that you're telling what I need to do to save my life. No offense. But I was unaware until I looked at this thing shortly before of the potential safety issues. And, Madam Chair, I want to know about really what studies have been done by the federal government on this, by other states. It's, you know, with all due respect to industry, you're a good businessman, and I need to know from the point of view of the neutral scientific studies. And that's why I chose you to ask my question, but I would ask you or anybody else who wishes to put themselves in the hot seat, and I'd like to get some real good scientific evidence on the safety necessity for this bill.
And
my trusty staff in the back here brought Representative Gruenberg all the information he can read overnight on that issue. So there is a lot.
I read awfully slowly, and I have to point.
That was Representative Harris. I agree, because I think we do need to have, and not saying anything against you guys, but you guys would stand to profit from this. And so I would like to get some information from someone else, just to make sure that that we know what the facts are, and I would like to know what the federal government said. Obviously, the federal government thinks it's pretty good, or they wouldn't have made that designation. So if we could hear that, that would be kind of important, I think. Representative Tammy Wilson.
Sorry, I have a question through the chair. What I'd like to know, and I don't know how easy it is, because you say that they said that some of the winter tires are on some of the vehicles for DOT and not others. If there could be some kind of breakdown on that to see if it's because of being in Anchorage versus being in Fairbanks or other places, I would like to know that, just to take as a department, when do you choose to put these types of tires on? When do you feel that, because I know you do things safely, so I'm sure you don't put just any kind of tire on your vehicle. You know, and I would like to kind of, you know, just a brief one page on how you make those decisions and which vehicles and where they're placed in the state. And I think that would give us kind of an indication whether we're looking at specific areas being, you know, having this problem more than maybe the southern part of the state. That would be really helpful for me.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe Diane could get that information for you, and Mary's going to follow up with all of us afterwards.
That would be great. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I might be able to provide you with some information that might satisfy one of the questions asked earlier. My office collects the fatality reports of all motor vehicles, and we do it in part with the Alaska Motor Vehicle Collision Report, which I happen to have for another bill we're going to be addressing earlier. And there is there are several pages to the motor collision report that law enforcement officers are required to fill out. And they deal with everything from the vehicle to the conditions of the road to the driver and then any passengers. And this is just a loan for the driver information. And this section here is the vehicle circumstances, and there's several boxes. And so as the law enforcement officer is filling out this report, and they fill them out for every single motor vehicle collision that they are responsible for reporting, there's one for tire failure or inadequate. And so that's how we're able to gather the information on the number of crashes that relate to inadequate tires. Now, there might be other factors involved, like inattention or, you know, the road conditions are bad. But when you're talking about bad tires or unsafe tires, we are able to gather that data.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You folks run a very good operation. And, you know, we've dealt with you on everything from seat belts, where former speaker was in fact the key vote on passing that bill, and I was happy to support it too.
Yes.
To follow his lead, and on the texting bill that you helped pass a few years ago, when we had that bill up, and a number of others, and I would like to see such things as what the federal regulations is. Does the federal government have a law or regulation mandating these tires? Apparently not, because apparently they're not mandated now. How many other states have them? This kind of stuff. We've dealt with a lot of safety stuff in this committee. Mandatory headlights, a number of years ago, requiring flaps on the back of trucks to stop the gravel that's run up, Sam Cotton's bill, a whole lot of different things. And I'd like to see some really good research, what you have. because I think this is an important step, and I've never heard of it before in any other state or anything. Let me just ask one question after that soliloquy. Does any state mandate this now?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we'll need to get that information.
I see the former speaker is shaking his head.
No.
The answer is negative. Okay, so then we're really plowing new ground, and that's something that this legislature normally doesn't do. We're so small, we follow the lead of other states, but if we're going to do this, we really have to know what we're doing.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking at the fiscal note, and it seemed to me that if this is going to be $1 million and it's caused by basically having to buy tires that are approved winter tires, and for all the vehicles, whether the tires are still serviceable that are on there now, if we had the clause that would grandfather the current tires in for 4 years, maybe this fiscal note would be lowered by a great amount, and that would maybe make this a little more palatable for members of the committee.
Representative Harris.
Madam Chair, Representative Harris again. I have here a study from ICER. Representative Grunberg, I don't know if you like ICER or not.
And that's
but,
just on your First Amendment.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's on half of the First Amendment, I think, actually. But, Madam Chair, the thing you have to remember about departments and fiscal notes is they're going to put out, you know, whatever they think is the highest amount possible. And those of us that have been on the Finance Committee, and I've been a co-chair of Finance in the past, have been known to whittle finance or fiscal notes down and eliminate them sometimes because the departments have a way of doing something for their benefit, and they also have a way of not justifying it if it means they've got to come before us and say, all right, now show us. You know, it's easy to print out a fiscal note. It's another thing to justify it. You know, the other thing that isn't pointed out is that if in fact you have a reduction in accidents, you have a tremendous reduction in the amount of work the state troopers have to do, the DOT has to do in cleaning up the road afterwards, you know, a whole bunch of other issues that are out there that aren't reflected in any fiscal notes. And those are negative fiscal notes. So, you know, don't read too much into a fiscal note that might come before you from a department saying this is what it's going to cost. Because I think my friend over here, Representative Johansson, has seen a few fiscal notes that come from departments over the years that were a little less inaccurate in the end.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I think because there's no other state that has this, and if we pass this bill, this is a first in our nation. And because of that, I'm going to hold the bill. We will, because I'm afraid that if we don't, there won't be votes, because I know of two amendments that we probably would have put stick on it. So I think we will hold it. Please, everyone, get your amendments to me so I know what they are, and we will try to get a committee substitute as soon as we can.
Yeah, Madam Chair, hopefully the members have the other amendments that you should have a copy of it. There's three proposed amendments that I have brought to you, Amendment 1, 2, and 3, starting with page 1, line 11. I don't know if you all have that or not, but those are amendments, or they're more than conceptual, but they're amendments. Hopefully the committee will think about those, and Madam Chair, if you produce a committee substitute, maybe you might think about incorporating those in that committee substitute.
Talk about those amendments real quick, though, because sure. I hate to do it without discussing it.
Sure.
So why don't you go into amendment number, do you want to go ahead and move the...
Sure. Would you like, Madam Chair, all amendments to be moved or one at a time?
Just all of them, and then we'll discuss them.
Okay. I'd like to move amendment number 1, 2, and 3 for purposes of discussion.
And then if you would just go over and explain why
why don't you object for purposes of discussion?
Representative Johansson.
I would like to object. I think we should probably take them one at a time.
One at a time.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
And I'll
okay.
All right, let's start with Amendment Number 1, Madam Chair. The First Amendment.
Wait. Oh,
I'm sorry.
I withdraw my first amendment, first motion, rather, and offer a new amendment focusing just on Amendment Number 1, please.
Object. All right, here we go.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The First Amendment deals basically with bringing it down into an area of the state which is that has predominantly the coldest weather. The majority of the main roads in the areas and pretty much excludes Southeast Alaska, whereas you see it's 40-some degrees out here today and that sort of stuff. So take away some of the issue that folks say about regionalizing. And that's what that amendment does, and it's certainly worthy of discussion. But it tries to narrow the focus of the bill down to areas where you certainly have the coldest weather and typically the snowiest weather.
Representative Munoz,
could you speak to the exclusion of the Dalton, Parks, Richardson, Tokalaska, Glenn, and Sterling highways?
It doesn't exclude those, and if you read it, it says an exclusive of any road not connected to the Dalton, Parks, Richardson, da-da-da-da-da. Those roads would be included as long as they, were north of 60 north latitude.
So, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that would exclude areas in Southeast Alaska?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative
Just have one quick question. Where's 60 north latitude?
I didn't. She had her name, her hand up first. Representative Tammy Wilson.
So exactly what are you excluding?
I don't have the map that shows. John, do you have?
Yeah.
It's taken off of. Are you back there? Madam Chair, if I could ask my trusty staff, the guy that has stuff on his tie. No, his tie is clean today. John Bitney to come forward, and he could explain that here for you if you want.
Okay.
That's an inside joke on some book that was written, I think.
You need to see this?
Madam Chair, I'm John Bitney, staff to the sponsor. The effort was, with Amendment 1, to craft, if you will, an exemption south of Yakutat in Alaska, so that Southeast Alaska would be exempt, and then would exempt roads that are off the main highway system.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. So as long as your car stayed in that area, you're okay, but if for any reason you would even move, be driving in Anchorage for whatever reason, you would then have to switch over. So, like, I'm coming from Fairbanks, so I drive my car down here. I'm exempt as long as I'm here. But if I go back to Fairbanks during these dates, I would have to switch them over for that remaining period.
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, you would not, of course, be penalized for having winter tires on in Southeast Alaska. So you could have them on, unlike studded tire, if you will. So you could leave on the winter tire in Southeast Alaska if you chose. But if you were in Southeast Alaska and you got on the ferry in Haines and drove to Fairbanks and didn't have them on, then essentially you'd be not in compliance with what the bill says currently.
Okay, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So these tires are mostly based on temperature, not snowfall.
Madam Chair, I'm trusting the expert's testimony on that in that regard.
Okay.
And I would just like to add, if I could, the way current statutes are written in relation to studded tires, the way that they are written in a way to give you time periods where you're allowed to have them on and then you're not allowed to have them on. And we essentially recognize different latitudes in our state statutes where you have longer windows of time the more north you go that we allow you to have them on. So we didn't think that we were, no pun intended, reinventing the wheel here.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How about out in the Aleutians? Are you going to require these for people out in the Aleutians?
Madam Chair, Amendment Number 1, of course, would exclude them since they're not connected.
Oh, they... Oh, I see. This is a double negative. And I ain't got no understanding of that.
Okay. I do have some concerns about that because this year here in Juneau we have really had nice weather, but last year it was pretty rotten and it was cold all the time and it was hovering between freezing and thawing quite a bit, and so it's just a thought that there will be two rules of thought here. Some of them will say, thank heaven we don't have to be included, and there will be others that say, well, aren't I just as important as somebody else, you know, and the rest of the state. So that's something for us to think about.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We heard a lot of testimony from people in Petersburg, Wrangell, and Sitka that had a problem with this, but they had no problem with it if it was farther north. So, you know, your constituents weighed heavy on my decision.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But
and we hopefully we can hurry up with this.
Right. There would be no punishment if someone went ahead and put the winter studded the bus tires on their vehicle to protect the safety of their family, and it would be encouraged, but it wouldn't be legally mandatory.
Absolutely. Understanding too, you know, I mean, we talk about enforcement. We're not
Representative Hare.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. This bill is not requiring the troopers or the local police department to check everybody's tires and see if they have it. Quite frankly, it'd be in most people's opinion. I think that obviously, if there's an accident involving a vehicle and they have the wrong kind of tires on in the wintertime, and that's a contributing factor to that, then the police have, just like with seat belts or just like with texting on a phone or other things. I mean, they don't. We made it illegal to text on a phone while you're driving, right? But I don't see too many police officers stopping somebody for that. It tends to be if there's a crime committed or an accident or whatever, and they feel that's a contributing cause and can prove it, that's part of the the sentencing or part of before the courts. But I don't think anybody's saying that the troopers or the police are going to go stop somebody out there on purpose if they try to look around their tire and see if they have the right tire on or not.
Follow-up, Representative.
Did you think about doing a bill that would encourage this versus mandate it to see if that worked first? It's always nice to be nice.
Well, we have, I think in the bill there's a provision, Madam Chair, there's a provision for a public education campaign, so I mean, that's part of it. But we still have
the mandatory part with it.
Right, and if you want to have any teeth to it, then you make it mandatory. If you don't, if you just want to make a feel-good thing, then just say it'd be nice to do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just checking to see if there's another fiscal note that covers that. No, there's not. I'm just asking.
The PR campaign too.
Yeah, DOT to get that the next time that we have the bill up in front of us. Okay.
We're going to ask the governor to do a thing on television. You know,
public service.
Hopefully, nobody will ask him to take it off there.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, speaking about fiscal notes, for a number of years, I know that several of us have been interested in having some legislation that provided for municipal fiscal notes, because right now we don't. All we do is find out the fiscal impact on state departments. Well, this bill brings up a third variation on the same theme, whether the legislature should require, in some cases, a public fiscal note. How much is this going to cost the public?
Well, and I think maybe that we might include into the bill the other one. That was one of the things that I've got noted, is that if we have 4 years to get it in, that's usually time for people. It's time for them to buy another set of tires, and then they would That would be something they'd have to do anyway. So,
Madam Chair, to respond, if I may, to that.
Representative Gruenberg.
That would be true in many districts. In my district, it's not true. Most of my people have much older cars, and some of them have no cars at all because they can't afford them.
Don't their tires ever wear out?
Well, they might. They take the bus.
No.
Tires. I'm saying that buying a car is a much bigger expense for the people in Mountain View than in most of the other districts around here. And this could be something that would prevent somebody from buying a car. It is a very, with all due respect, it's a very major expense for the poor people that I represent.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
We have a specific amendment before us on the table. I'm wondering if we could...
Yes, thank you. Good point. So, Representative Peterson, did you have comments? Any other comments? I think we'll just take the amendment and decide what to do with it. So, you want to remove your objection, or do you want to?
If that's what the chair would like, I'll remove my objection.
It's the wishes of the committee. Hearing no objection, I assume that amendment number one is passed. And let's try to hurry because we've got another bill that we'd like to get on the schedule here.
Okay.
We've got two of them, in fact.
Madam Chair.
Representative Munoz.
I'd like to move amendment number two.
Check.
Okay, there's been an objection. Comments? Representative Harris.
Madam Chair, amendment number two and amendment number three basically just kind of go along with the studded tire situation in the state. So figure if it's good enough for studded tires, they're supposed to be on at that point in time and then come off at a certain, or allowed to come on at a certain point in time and then required to come off at a certain point. We tried to match this up with a...
Okay. Now...
I'll remove my objection, Madam Chair.
Okay. The objection has been removed. Hearing no objection, so it's so moved. Amendment number two was moved.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask you to make an amendment to amendment number three?
Yes.
After the word October, put 2014.
Yes. This one already has it on there.
What is it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Mind you.
Okay. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move amendment number three on page 2, line 4, after the word effect, delete December, and insert October 15th, 2014.
I'm going to object for a specific technical amendment to the amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg.
If the members would look at line 4 on page 2, I think we should delete December 15, 2011, and put October, what date?
October 14th.
Is it October 15th you want? October 15, 2014.
That's what we just said.
He just wanted
to... No, I was talking about what you had to delete.
He just wants to delete the
whole
date.
Oh, I see. So you're asking to delete one date and insert the other date.
Right.
Okay.
Max, you always complicate things.
So now, because we've got something going here. Did you move an amendment to amend the amendment?
Well, yeah, and she accepted it.
Okay, she accepted it. No objection. So the amendment to the amendment number three has passed. Okay, now we have before us amendment number three.
As amended.
As amended. Representative Gruenberg, do you still object to...
I did never object.
Yes, you did.
Okay, well, I don't.
Okay, he is...
I didn't, I won't, and I wouldn't if I could.
You objected so that you could put your amendment on.
Okay, well, I remove it.
Okay, so it's been removed. Hearing no objection, amendment number three, as amended, has passed.
Right.
Okay, we are done with this. We are going to work on it a little bit in between now and the next time and have some committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And very quickly, we're going to go to our second bill, Our next agenda item is 257, banned cell phone use when driving. Representative Dugan, would you please come forward and introduce your bill? And does any of this need to...
Not for me.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All righty.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, members, it's great to be back in the Transportation Committee. I'm Mike Dugan. I represent Spinard in the Alaska House, and I'm here to talk to you today on House Bill 257, which is an act relating to prohibiting the use of cellular phones when driving a motor vehicle. And frankly, the bill is not much more complicated than that. What we attempt to do here is to prohibit the use of cell phones while driving, with an exception for emergency phone calls. Violations would be punishable by fines of up to $300. The bill comes about because cell phones distract drivers, and distracted drivers cause accidents. Studies have shown that using a cell phone while driving is as dangerous as driving with a 0.08 blood alcohol content, i.e. driving drunk. Drivers who use cell phones while driving pay less attention to the road, react more slowly to changing conditions, and are four times more likely to get into an accident. This holds true whether a driver is using a hands-free device or not. This is, to my way of thinking in any way, Madam Chair, an issue of public safety. Drivers distracted by cell phones put themselves and everyone around them at risk. In the same way we have already prohibited texting while driving, watching television while driving, and being drunk while driving, House Bill 257 bans using a cell phone while driving. This is not an issue of personal responsibility or liberty. No voter has the right to drive distracted, and no driver's personal irresponsibility should put other innocent bystanders in harm's way. Distracted drivers who talk on their cell phones and put everyone at risk should be held accountable for their actions. It is true that there are many other causes of driver distraction in daily life. However, as cell phone ownership has become ubiquitous, using a cell phone while driving has become one of the most common causes of driver distraction. As that has happened, the accident rate related to cell phones has risen. It is important to note that cell phone use distracts all drivers, young and old. No matter how much any individual may feel otherwise, using a cell phone while driving takes a driver's attention off the road. By prohibiting the use of cell phones while driving, House Bill 257 will help keep drivers' attention where it belongs, on the road. With that, I'll be happy to try to answer any questions the members may have.
Okay, I must comment that my mother was in an accident. Her car was totaled. Some lady was driving with, she was talking on the cell phone. My mother couldn't get out of the car on her side, and so she had to crawl across the other side, crawl out. She's 83 now. She had to crawl out the other side and went over to the other lady's car, and she was still talking on her phone. It's just amazing sometimes. So that just floored me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, any questions for the sponsor?
I'm calling 911.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I've been waiting for Representative Dugan to be on the other side of the Transportation Committee.
I bet you have.
I wish he was in charge of DOT projects. just real quickly, I've got a few questions.
Sure.
Cellular phone versus mobile phone. There are other devices that may not be captured by the term cellular. Have you talked about maybe using mobile instead, or is there a problem with that? Sat phones, satellite phones, things like that.
We use cellular phones as the term of art because it's far and away the most commonly used phone. I don't remember, you know, ever seeing anybody driving down the street with a sat phone going on. I could see that any phone system that has the same characteristics, that is, that you can dial it up, that you can talk as you're driving, would essentially create the same kinds of potential liabilities, whether you, no matter what you would call it. So, you know, it doesn't, it, to my way of thinking, if we need to expand that definition, I'd be happy to do that.
Further questions?
Follow-up, Reverend Zip Johansson.
Thank you. I think you already testified to the fact that having a hands-free exemption is not something you're interested in.
Apparently, all of the statistical information that I've been able to find, there's something like 30 studies that have been done on cell phone use. And absolutely none of them support the theory that using, you know, what they call hands-free phones make you any more sort of attentive or any more likely to be a good driver. Apparently, the dysfunctions in the brain and not in the hands. And it's really about what people are doing when, instead of driving, they're conducting their conversation.
I have a question then. This is the chair. What is the difference between hands-free and talking to the person beside you?
Madam Chair, I'm now going to sort of retail for you the things I've read. So this is not anything that I have any real information on other than what I've gotten secondhand. But my understanding is that the studies that they have attempted, or excuse me, that they have done on people trying to see what the transaction is when you're talking on a cell phone, is that for some reason people are, generally speaking, less attentive than when they're talking on a cell phone than they are talking to somebody who's sitting right next to them, and that the main fact, if there is a fact in this, this is all scientific studies, the main fact is that people are more used to talking basically sort of in short bursts when they're talking. So if I was talking to Representative Johansson, I'd talk to him, and then I'd sort of go like this, and I'd come back to him, that they're not sort of concentrating in the same way that they seem to be concentrating when they're talking on a cell phone.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Okay, you may, and through the chair, you made a comment, no one should drive distracted. Well, basically none of us should drive. I mean, children are a distraction, people eat in the car. I've seen people actually read the newspaper when they're driving down. I have, seriously. I mean, those things are all bad, but to what extent do you try to tell people to do the right thing, which is to drive? I mean, can you really legislate that?
Well, if we didn't have to legislate it, it would be a much happier world. But the fact of the matter is, the day before I came down here for the session, I was driving along Minnesota Boulevard, and a lady in a Subaru got a phone call, and her speed went down to 45 from 45 miles an hour to 10 miles an hour, just like that. And I got to tell you, I had to do some tall stepping, because as you may know, that's a 3 or 4 lane street there, and usually that's full of cars too, to keep from taking her and knocking her into the middle of next week. Some kinds of it's my view on this, that some kinds of distraction are worse than others, frankly, and the distraction that you might have turning to say to tell your child to knock off whatever it is your child is doing and then turn back to look at the road is different than this distraction you might get when suddenly you're digging in your pocket or your purse to trying to get your hands on the cell phone to answer it. You know, it's as simple as that. Some things are more distracting.
Follow up.
If we go on safety, okay, I get a phone call and I need to take the phone call and I pull over on the side of the road, am I not possibly even creating another hazard by having my car sitting on a narrow road while I take that call? I mean, are we really saving one area without causing another problem?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. sorry. it would depend on what road you were on. You know, there are some roads where, frankly, you shouldn't answer your cell phone. You know, I mean, there are plenty of them where you got that much shoulder, right? And my experience with those is I'm just trying to get down the road without ending up in the ditch. You know, there's no constitutional right to answer your cell phone the minute it rings for anybody. There's no constitutional right to, do a lot of things that may not be such a good idea. And I would hope that no matter what the law said, that if you're in a tough driving situation and your cell phone rang, you wouldn't answer it.
Well, through the chair.
Follow up.
With what you just said, if that was true, then we wouldn't need a bill like this.
That's true. We wouldn't, but clearly we do.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many other states are there that have a cell phone ban like this from when you're driving?
A bunch. I'm not the legal. Sorry, Madam Chairman. The legal landscape here is changing all the time, so I'm not exactly sure how many states right now have got some form of cell phone ban. I know that some of the big ones on the West Coast, California and Oregon, do, and that there's sort of pockets all over the place, but I just can't put the number to it.
But, Madam Chair, follow up. They have got, so I mean, you can't use a hands-free device in California?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Can you use a hands-free device in California? I thought they'd only banned it for the old-fashioned cell phone.
I don't believe that any of the current... I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
You know what, Cindy? She seems to know the answer right to that.
She probably understood the question. I misunderstood the question. So the fact of the matter is, to my knowledge, there are no states that ban hands-free devices at this time.
So that means that there's states that say no cell phones, but there's an exemption for hands-free.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, that's true.
Okay.
So we'd be the first.
And DOT, I see a shaking up and down of her head, which means yes.
One, and so if someone was stopped at a stoplight, would they be able to answer their phone for,
Madam Chair, through the chair, my understanding of the current state of the law is if you're engaged in whatever there's a term for it, but if you're engaged in the kinds of activities that are a normal part of driving and you're talking on your cell phone, you're breaking the law. And I think that also includes if you're at a stoplight, since you don't know when the stoplight's going to change.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But it would not include if you were, quote, operating, like turning on the radio. That's operating, but it's not driving, isn't it? I can ask Cindy that, but I think that's the legal answer.
I think that's right, although I'm not sure why it's a drafting question rather than something else, I think.
I know that's true for DWI. They've convicted people and the conviction's been upheld when it's it was operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated, and the person was
sitting there.
Sitting there with the heater on and the radio, and he was sleeping, and they still affirmed the conviction. It seems to me, back to the question of the chair on Representative Peggy Wilson, on why, what's the difference between hands-free and not. Number one, with hands-free, you have both hands on the wheel. You're not relegated to just one hand, which can make things like turning pretty difficult. Number two, even if you're talking to somebody else, you don't have the problem of volume and the distance from your ear, and whether you're on speakerphone or not. So there really is a difference when you have a headset, for example, and the volume is set and you can hear everything, and you can have both hands on the wheel. That may well be why the states have allowed hands-free.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Through the chair. So if I pulled over with my cell phone, same thing kind of like at the stoplight, I'm still, my vehicle's still running, I still couldn't answer my phone, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no. If you're not actively engaged in the action of driving, then if you, your cell phone rings, you can pull over, stop, and talk. That would not be, I mean, despite the example of sitting in your stop vehicle and being drunk and getting busted, there's no penalty that applies here unless you're engaged in what would be the normal actions of driving the vehicle.
Thank you.
Okay. Is it all right if we get Cindy up here to answer some of this? Because I think maybe she might be able to answer this maybe quicker. Mm-hmm. And so
well,
she can just join you.
She knows more than I do, so probably she can.
I have a question.
Representative Grunberg, you want to ask the sponsor?
Yeah. And I, by the way, I think if your car was in parked, you wouldn't necessarily be driving it. It would park, you couldn't drive it. So that might be okay. But the thing that I was concerned about, last year, some of us drove down the Dalton Highway. And I talked to the guy I was driving with. And those people need cell phones to communicate, particularly if they're a pusher car, truck, or vice versa. When, as you know, they have the truck that hauls, that pulls, and then there's one or more pusher trucks, and they've really got to coordinate, and sometimes there's no visibility, and he was very, very firm that we had to have some kind of an exception in something like this that would allow those professional truckers on the Dalton Highway to do what they do, and I don't know how that would be crafted, but I'm through the chair to you as the sponsor of the bill. It might be worth it to call Carlisle or the Teamsters or somebody to make sure that there's an exception in for those people, or they'll be back in next year, sure as shooting, if this passes, to ask for that.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunberg, I like my bill just fine. I recognize that this is the first stop in the committee process, and if there are going to be changes, then there are going to be changes. But I had not anticipated doing a sponsor substitute on this bill. It's really, as I see it, the committee's prerogative to make the changes that it thinks need to be, you know, made. I've never seen a bill go out the same way it went in, and never been involved with one that was exactly the way I thought it ought to be. And, you know, I don't expect that to happen here either.
Representative Johansson, is it all right with you if I wait and have Cindy come up first?
Yeah.
Cindy, come on up and make some, you've been hearing the questions, and if you could just comment on those.
For the record, my name is Cindy Cashin. I'm the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office, and I apologize to the committee and the sponsor of the bill for not for becoming so enthusiastic about the bill. I couldn't keep my mouth shut behind it. Did you want me to read my testimony, or do you want me to just answer questions?
Go ahead and read your testimony, and then that might answer some of the questions that we had.
Terrific. My office is in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We receive federal transportation dollars to administer to data-driven driver behavior programs that encourage safe driving behavior. Naturally, we are very interested and be very active in driver distraction data and the studies that NHTSA has produced. We receive our federal funding from the DOT arm of NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and they have a policy on cellular phone use while driving. Their policy is that it is the primary responsibility of the driver to operate a motor vehicle safely. The task of driving requires full attention and focus. Cell phone use can distract drivers from this task, risking harm to themselves and others. Therefore, the safest course of action is to refrain from using a cell phone while driving. NHTSA research shows that driving while using a cell phone can pose a serious cognitive distraction and degrade driver performance. NHTSA estimates that driver distraction from all sources contributes to 25% of all police-reported traffic crashes. 10 years ago, that number was only 15%. And it should be noted that driver distraction covers everything from turning on the radio to using your cell phone. There are 8 states that have a ban on handheld devices: California, Connecticut, District of Columbia, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Washington, and the Virgin Islands. In those states with established handheld laws, distracted driving-related fatalities have declined between 24% in New York and 65% in Connecticut. In 2006, NHTSA and the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute released a 100-car naturalistic driving study, which tracked the behavior of the drivers of 100 vehicles equipped with video and sensor devices for more than 1 year. Highway safety offices like these kind of studies because they give us all kinds of data, and we can provide you with all types of driver distraction data, anywhere from turning on the radio to the cell phone usage, and compare it between what type of distraction is more dangerous. So the questions you were asking, Representative Groenberg, I could provide the answer to based on this 100-car study. It's very, very interesting.
Do you have the data between a cell phone and a hands-free cell phone?
Yes, we do.
Good.
The most common distraction for drivers is the use of cell phones. The available research on this 100-car study indicates that whether it is a hands-free or a handheld cell phone, the cognitive distraction is significant enough to degrade a driver's performance. This can cause a driver to miss key visual and audio cues needed to avoid a crash. And it's because there's different factors that come into play whether you use a handheld or a hands-free. The handheld, you're using your one hand while you're driving with the other, but your call, it tends to be take up less time. When you're using just when you have it attached to your ear, or it's a hands-free, you tend to talk longer. So they kind of balance each other out as far as crashes, injuries, and fatalities. Yeah, the results show that manual dialing was about as distracting as grooming and eating, but a little less distracting than reading or changing CDs. So I can get this report to you all if you'd like.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like that.
Yeah, and I was hoping that maybe we could make sure that the next committee has it as it goes through, but getting cross-eyed looks over here.
Now I have some driving statistics, from the Highway Analysis System. That's Jack Stickle's office. It's not my office, but we work together on collecting data. Jack Stickle's office collects all of the motor vehicle traffic crash data. My office collects the fatalities, the deaths. Between 2002 and 2007, in Alaska, there were over 78,000 motor vehicle crashes, 78,162. Between 2002 and 2007, there were 335 motor vehicle crashes involving cell phone use. Of those 335 motor vehicle crashes involving cell phone use, 189 resulted in property damage only, 127 resulted in minor injuries, 19 in major injuries, and no fatalities. Between 2002 and 2007, there were 895 injuries in those cell phone traffic crashes. 200 resulted in minor injuries, 20 resulted in major injuries, and there were no fatalities. I have our traffic collision record report form, and I can provide a copy of that to you as well. So you can see it's very complicated for the law enforcement officers to fill out because we want as much data as we can get. For the driver information, there's a section called human circumstance, and you check off everything from no improper driving to backing unsafely to wrong sideways. There's 26 boxes they can check off, including cell phone use. But the officer can only check off two maximum boxes, so he has to choose which two boxes he's going to check off. And so that's only part of the reason why we lack so much cell phone data. The other is that this is relatively new, a new type of unsafe driving. And we also have a problem with distracted driving definitions. Here we collect cell phone use, but we don't collect other types of distracted driving. So it's we're trying to get our traffic record forms in order as quickly as we can regarding cell phone use, since this is such a top priority with Secretary LaHood, but it's going to take time. So in the meantime, we're looking to the NHTSA 100 car study, because that provides us with so much information on how the brain works with driving. So that concludes my testimony, and I'm available for any questions.
Representative Peterson? Well, I'm sorry, Representative Johansson had his.
It's okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Representative Peterson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on what you were just saying at the end, so I take it that you would like to see the forms changed to add a separate category on there that says cell phone use, so the officer wouldn't have to choose between the 26 other causes and that cell phone use. That way we could track the data more carefully.
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, that is correct.
Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back to what I was mentioning about the use, well, two questions here. Number one, is there any particular reason this has an effective date as of July 1, 2010? My concern is that that takes additional votes on the floor of the House. Is there a reason, a safety reason that should be in there?
Through the chair, Representative Broomberg, that effective date has nothing to do with my office.
Okay. Number two, my questions concerning the people who are on the Hall Road. Do you have any information to add about that, either statistical or anecdotal or anything? When I was talking about the truckers who want to be able to
Through the chair, Representative Broomberg, actually there's an exemption already existing for those types of drivers. It says this section does not apply to a person using a cellular telephone for emergency purposes, including an emergency call. Oh, that's to a law enforcement agency. I would need to double check this statute, but it's my understanding that there is already an exemption in place, and I will have to double check this with Mary, but there's already an exemption in place for law enforcement officers and DOT officials and emergency responders.
No, I'm not talking about them. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about truckers on the Hall Road up to the North Slope. These truckers are in constant communication with each other because
right.
One of them pulls the cargo and another one pushes the cargo. They're not emergency people at all. but they have to be in constant communication.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that I do not have an answer to. So.
And there's none, through the chair, there's no governmental studies or anything on anything like that.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, there are a couple of very good studies involving FHWA or FMCSA, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, that works closely with our Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Office. And the director is Dan Breed, and I would be happy to work with Dan to get that answer for you.
Through the chair, if that could be provided to us, I would be great.
Okay. I have a couple questions.
Representative Johansson, do you have any questions?
No, I'm fine. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Thanks. With commercial drivers, do they generally use handhelds or hand-free?
You know, through the chair, Representative Munoz, I don't have that answer. That's, but I am sure that I could get that from Director Breeden.
Great. Okay. And then one other question. On those states that implemented laws to ban cell phone use that saw reductions in their crash rates, in those instances, all of the states continued to use handheld devices, as you said. Is there data that ties handheld then to continuing accident rates in those states that have banned other cell phone use?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, you mean hands-free?
I mean, I might be mixing. You said that there are 7 states, I believe, that have banned handheld cell phone use.
8.
Okay. And that the data shows that there was a reduction in crashes in those states that did ban. They did continue, though, to allow hand-free devices. Is there continuing data that indicates that there is still a correlation with accidents in those states that have banned regular cell phone use but continue to allow hands-free?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I apologize for interrupting. A recent study came out that has provoked discussion that indicates perhaps that perhaps drivers who used to use handheld devices have now switched to hands-free devices. But the study was not conclusive, and there were different opinions about it because it was based on insurance data and not fatality data. The numbers, the statistics that went down were not crashes. They were the distracted driving related fatalities. And again, distracted driving encompasses all types of distractions, not just cell phone use. So it's a very large umbrella we're looking at. So the fatalities involving distracted driving went down. Do we know for certain if it was because of these laws? No. But perhaps.
Any other questions? Okay. There are, you know what, what is the wishes of the committee? Representative Munoz?
You know, I support the bill, but I am concerned about commercial drivers and being sure that we're not creating a situation that's going to create difficulties for them. I've heard from a number of commercial operators that have asked for a hands-free mode consideration in this legislation. So I do think that we need to keep that discussion open as we move forward, that consideration.
Okay. There is someone online that would like to testify, so I would like to give them a chance. Roy Hoyt Jr. from Homer, are you online?
Yes, I am.
And we're almost out of time. If you could state your name and your affiliation and give us your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Roy Hoyt Jr., and I reside in Homer, and I'm testifying for myself. And I think that it's a great idea, and it should be enacted to eliminate the use of cell phones while the vehicle is in motion. When you were talking before about while driving and trying to figure out whether a person be driving or something else if they pulled over to the side, you can clarify that by just stating in there that while the vehicle is in motion. And if you drive around Homer here, I'll guarantee you that you'll have the living daylight scared out of you at least once a week with somebody with their ear glued to a cell phone and rounding the corner off of Lake onto Pioneer or down in front of the library. I'll tell you, it's why they aren't more accidents here in Homer. Because of that, it surprises me. And that's the main thing. With hands-free, you know, for years we went along and used the CB radios for communication between vehicles and all, and now that CB sort of died, they've got the hands-free mobile phones, and I don't see as big a problem with them as I do with the handheld phones. And that's about all I have to say about this.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Hoyt. And I don't see any questions. Oh, Representative Peterson.
Oh, I was just going to state that this bill would not ban people from using CB radios. It would just be cell phones. So maybe this would bring back the days of the CB radio. It could be back to the future. Good buddy.
Well, I've got several old ones. Maybe I'd be able to sell them.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And I am going to leave testimony open in case there's some other people that are interested next week. And we'll just hold this and finish up next week. And is the other... Is he here?
His staff is here.
Let's quickly, they want to quickly at least introduce it so that the final, if they're not here, we can't, but if they are, we'll.
I think Ken can talk.
I'm prepared to stand for the representative, but he was here until a minute ago, so
okay.
I'd like to give him a second to come back.
The final item on our agenda is House Bill 8, Pipe for a Natural Gas Pipeline, and if you could just... give us a little information real quick so that we can have the bill before us.
Sure, very quickly, and I feel bad that Representative Crawford is no longer here. My name is Ken Alper. I'm staff to Representative Harry Crawford, representing the 21st District, East Anchorage. This is a bill that would empower the Commissioner of Transportation to go out and buy the physical pipe required for the in-state section of the natural gas pipeline, approximately 800 miles of 48-inch pipe. That we would get up here, we would keep it in inventory as something of an incentive and a visual reminder of our need to move forward on the pipeline. But more to the point, once the project moves forward, we would then be able to either sell that pipe to the builder of the pipeline at our cost, thus saving them money on the increase in price in steel that's expected in the intervening years, or contribute the pipe for an equity position in the pipeline.
Okay.
We've done some number crunching that shows that that transaction actually makes money for the state.
Okay, thank you very much. So now we do have the bill before so that we'll be able to bring it up at a later date and that we already have it. So
thank you, Madam
that's
Chairman.
The reason I allowed you to do that. And so having said that, we will adjourn.